Welcome to the 367th episode of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? And this is completely different than what I usually do. Usually I do this at home into my computer. And now we got a beautiful ballroom and we have an audience. Thank you guys for getting up this early in the morning. And most importantly, we have a guest. My guest, wow, I don't know where to begin with her introduction. I'll start by telling you she is one of the funniest people I know and one of my absolute favorite people. She has done everything from late night TV to Netflix to coaching movie stars as how to be funny. And Jessica Kearson, ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for Jess. Come up here. That's kind of appropriate that they play sort of a royalty.
Yeah, where did that music? Did you ask for that music?
No, you're known that way. You're known as comedy royalty.
I like that music. That was fancy.
That should be like your just regular walk-on music.
Yeah, I want that playing even when I'm walking around, just outside.
Just behind you.
Yeah, dun, 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 dun. Amazing.
So now that we have completed 19 Just for the Culture shows. Mm-hmm. Jess and I were, that's the show we were doing. I was hosting it and she was closing it. How do you feel after 19 shows? You think we're ready to hit the road?
Oh, man. Well, I did, I think, 10 other shows. No, more than that. I did 5 shows yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think I've done like 648 shows since I've been here for the past 2.5 weeks. And I'm very tired. It's a lot.
It is. Yeah. It becomes a lot. I have to say, this festival, that hasn't happened to me. That usually happens to me.
Yeah.
This one, I've only done so far 3 shows other than Just for the Culture.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been great. I've actually got to kick back and see other people's shows. Like right now, this is all I have scheduled for today.
Wow. Yeah, no, I mean, some of my shows have been dancing at the strip clubs. They haven't all been comedy.
You got to make lunch money.
Yeah, so that's why I'm so tired. It's not, you know, doing the comedy is one thing, but I've had to strip. And I, you know, I don't stretch a lot before I do that. So I have pulled muscles. I broke an ankle. It's just, it's a lot. You know, I haven't had time to get to the hospital. So I'm just like walking around with a broken ankle and I pulled a couple of muscles. And, you know, it's good to do a podcast at 11 in the morning and do comedy.
That's when we're our funniest.
Yeah.
Before noon is when
good.
We are.
Because you get the biggest laughs at 11 in the morning in a lighted room.
Well, that's why it's sold out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you guys could find a seat because I was worried that everyone could find a seat in the room.
If there's one thing they've always said about me is I am a draw before noon.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I draw the best at 7 in the morning.
Yeah,
usually.
I've been there. I've been to your 7 a.m.
Yeah.
The breakfast buffet sets.
Yeah, that one was in a petting zoo. Did you, that one? Yeah.
So let's go back because you say this in your act and I love it. So you have a master's degree and you chose to be a traveling clown.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I went to school to be a social worker at NYU. I mean, this is the same thing, except I don't have to listen. I talk because I really don't like listening to people. I'm self-centered. You know, it's that whole thing like most comics, addicts, piece of shit in the center of the universe. I never wanted to do stand up. My grandmother told me to do it. I was just sitting with friends. I mean, my cousins and my sister.
When she told you to do this, did she know she would become part of the act? Because no one does an old Jewish lady better or funnier than you.
What are you talking about?
yeah, She knew. She didn't care. She never cared. She was always like, use me in your act. She actually used to say that to me all the time. But she was watching me and my cousins and I and my sister, and I was making everyone laugh, and she called me over to her, and she said, you need to be a comedian. She said, every time you're sitting with people, you make them laugh. And I said, I could never do that. I could never get on stage in front of people. And she said, trust me, I'm your grandmother. I know these things. She was always a fan of the Borscht Belt comics and the Catskills and all those old school comics. And I was lost in my late 20s and looked in the back of the Village Voice in New York City and saw a class. And I was like, what can it hurt? I'll take a class. And then I did it. And it was a very uncomfortable, horrible experience. So I was like, this is perfect. because then I could be miserable. And it's comfortable and familiar. So I did it and I kept doing it. And she got to see me on The Tonight Show and The View and everything, and she loved it, and I performed with all those comedians that were she was fans of, like Pat Cooper, Dick Capri, Freddie Roman.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So you got to do some of that old school Catskills.
I did it with all of them in Florida. Yeah, so she was in heaven because she got to go to those shows and watch me bomb. I bombed on those shows.
That's so funny. So I have the same thing in that I did the class also. And then I did the 5-minute graduation show. But for me, I was immediately hooked. Like, I didn't come from this. Like, nobody, believe me, nobody in my family said you should be a comic, even though my mom was the funniest person I've ever known. And I told her, well, I just chose to go pro, you know. But my experience was this: when I hit the stage the first time, I had no doubt this is what I was going to do. Have you ever questioned?
I mean, I knew. I knew from the feeling of just feeling powerful. Like, I felt very powerful on stage, and I kind of felt like I'm going to... it was like the first time I ever felt really strong and powerful, and like, no one can hurt me up here. And kind of like I can get back at everyone being on stage with a microphone. And also, it's the only time I ever feel fully present is when I'm on stage. Because when I'm off stage, I'm like, what is going on? And my head is spinning all the time.
Well, this is something that in the audience might not pick up on this right away, but it's something that we hugely have in common and why we get along, right? Because all of the other stuff that we have, you don't mind me talking about.
No, never.
You know, addiction and the occasional bouts with depression, the mental stuff, all of that stuff. That
constant.
All of that stuff that goes away when on stage, but off stage. But we can laugh about it. And I've had some of the greatest talks about mental health issues and just reality versus showbiz with this woman, because we can touch base on that, right? It all leaves when you go on stage. Like, I once had a therapist say, if I could get you to be the person off stage that you are on stage, you'd be fine. And I was like, yeah, but then I would be funny.
Yeah.
Be walking around well.
Yeah, you worry if you get... I worry if I get too healthy, I won't be really funny. But I will never be okay, and that's okay. I know that sounds nuts, but, like, I'm okay with that.
I just curious, how many people are going on in there? Because I've heard at least 7 or 8 different voices. Just give them some of the... Give them some of the many voices of Jessica Kearson.
What's going on? What are you talking about? There's not...
Well, this one is the one that everyone... I don't even know what you're talking about. I mean, like, what you...
There's a ton of voices in there. I'm not, like, I just deal with... I've always dealt with anxiety my entire life. I mean, that's kind of a Jewish thing. Most Jewish people are very anxious. It's kind of ingrained in us, right? I mean, I think there's Jewish people in the audience. It's just kind of how we are. I never dealt with... I've always dealt with like a low grade depression, but since like all the political stuff and the COVID, that's jacked up. That's been jacked up the past, 6 years. Bad. And I've dealt with it. I do a ton of work on myself, like you do.
Yeah.
So I deal with it. I have kids, so I have to really work on it on a daily basis for them and for me and my wife. But, you know, it's like, I want to say about you before I go on and on about myself. You're an amazing person.
Thanks.
And you know, you work really hard on yourself. And, you know, Alonzo,
as you would say, it's a lot.
It's a lot. I know. I always say that, you know, someone, I'm going to start a new podcast and I'm thinking about names and my producer's like, you should just call it It's a Lot with Jessica Kirsten. Cause I always say it's a lot. And isn't it? I mean, life is a lot. Like, I just feel like that's a good name. But you really are. Like, I think you talk about so many things. You interview people and, you know, a lot of people know you and are fans, but you really are just an incredible human being. And on a personal basis, Alonzo is just a giver and is there for so many people and has incredible sobriety and is a beautiful, beautiful person. And is has such, you have such an amazing, amazing reputation in this business. Like, no one has ever said anything negative to me about you ever. I've never heard one negative
thing. I killed them. The ones, you won't be hearing from the ones that didn't like me there. They're swimming in the bay, we like to say.
Yeah, never. I've never heard one. And you hear negative things about everyone, like at least one negative thing. But it's true.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate that. I think one of the things that really helps me in this business is that I had a career in aerospace. Like I worked in the real world for 10 years. And when you come from the real world into show business, you're reminded, like, this is all fun. You know, mm-hmm. I remember one of my first jobs, right, day jobs, I was a truck driver for the kids show Power Rangers.
Oh, my God.
Right, yeah. A friend of mine, he was like, can you drive a U-Haul? And I was like, yeah. He said, same as a camera truck. I got a job for you. And I ended up becoming part of the crew. And for those who don't know, one of the perks in showbiz is you eat for free all the time. Like there's always food. So they would have the craft service laid out and the catering truck and you get lunch. And somebody was complaining. And I said to him, I said, you know, in the real world, you buy your own food. Like, you don't just walk up and there's a table full of free food. Like, so to what they took for granted, I'm like, are you kidding? This is awesome. This and all I got to do is drive a truck, and then I can nap, and then I wake up, and there's free food, and it's the same thing with this. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, George Wallace says it all the time: we have the greatest job in the world, right? Because we get to go out and make people laugh, and so I always have that love of it and that enjoyment of it, and I'm still at times humbled and flattered and blown away by, like, people I meet and experience. Like, last night doing the live wake with Bob Odenkirk. Like, I never met him. Mm-hmm. And he's a great guy, you know, and I'm a big fan. So there's that kind of thing. So I think that helps with my perspective. What outside of this helps you with perspective?
My children. Yeah. I mean, listen, I need like a family and a base outside of stand-up. And I feel for comics who don't have that. Meaning like a life. I don't mean just kids and that. I mean like friends, program, like everything besides just stand-up comedy. Because I feel like there was a time when I was just doing stand-up around comedians all the time. I had nothing else, and it's not good. Like, it's... Because, like, as an addict, I was, like, addicted to it, and it became everything, and it's a horrific business. The business side of it. I don't mean the performing, but the business side of it is very rough.
Right. Getting on stage is
the great part.
The best part of what we do.
Yeah. But, like, it's like here, you know, Alonzo and I are doing shows. You're killing every night. You know, people are screaming. And blah, 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 blah. It's like, and then you go home, and then it's like, I'm doing a show in Jersey Wednesday and have to drive there and sit in traffic. And, you know, people will be drunk, and then I have to fly to Detroit on Thursday and sit in a hotel room by myself, and I'll deal with drunk people. It's just, it's depressing. Like, it can get very depressing, and dealing with agents and managers and producers and trying to get shows, and then social media, and people write horrific, like yesterday someone wrote horrible things on my Instagram about my looks and horrible, like mean stuff.
You have to not read the comments.
I don't. Like, I literally just look and then it pops up. Like, I'm not searching for it. It's just something pops up and then you just look at it. Like, it's not like I'm looking for it. So, but it's the getting on stage makes it all worth it. But I have to have that balance of a life outside of stand up that gives me perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this, and that's why, because now, well, we're the veterans now.
Yeah.
Right? We've been in the game a long time. And when I talk to young comics and they're like, I just got engaged or I just had a baby, I always tell them, like, good, you have something real.
Mm-hmm.
Because this isn't real. Like, if you make this real, mm-hmm. you know, and people, and you see it, right? You see people just, you know, alcohol, drugs, whatever, they spin out, they burn out, because you have to have something, you have to step away from this. And I love what you said about leaving here, leaving Montreal, because this festival is so great. And then we go back to our real lives. And I remember the year I did my first gala, right? I was up here, and I think I did my gala on Tuesday night, big TV, 2,000 people, blah, blah, blah. And that Friday, I was at a VFW in Riverside, California. And it was like, oh, yeah, this is what I do. Like,
that's what happened last night. Last night I did the Joe Coy gala, you know, hair and makeup, have whatever many people, 1,000, 1,500 people. I don't know, who even knows, cameras everywhere. Joe Coy, you know, this one, people are screaming, people stood up, you know, Jessica, and then, like, I'll be in Detroit on Thursday, like, looking for an IHOP to try and get egg whites. Like, it's just crazy.
It is all part of it, right?
Yeah, of course.
All right, so the podcast is called Who's Paying Attention? And the background on that is, as you know, the media quit its job a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the coverage, like, this started back in 08 when Sarah Palin, remember the good old days when we thought Sarah Palin was crazy?
She is the healthiest person out there now.
Yeah, remember when that was like, oh, wow, this is nuts. So it started then, because I had this joke. I said, you know, if Walter Cronkite had to interview Sarah Palin, he'd have been just, bitch, please. And that would have been the end of the interview. He wouldn't have even wasted time, right? So it's the comics, we've become the truth tellers here, and that's why I do it. And, you know, you talked about it, the political landscape of America, what has happened in the past few years? How do you feel? Do you talk about it? I know your social media, you definitely touch on it. I don't hear you touch on it a lot on stage. Do you ever? And how do you feel that as a comic that we fit into that?
I don't talk about it a lot on stage because I don't find it funny. Actually, I'm really disturbed, horribly disturbed, and very sad, and enraged, and petrified, because I have four daughters, and the oldest is 16, the youngest are three-year-old twins. Can you believe that? I know. So I have my own little women's march. and I'm also married to a woman, and I have been traumatized by the whole thing with Trump, and literally traumatized. Like, it's not like, I'm upset about it. Like, I was really traumatized. And now with the whole abortion thing, like, it's just too much for me. I'm very, like, I know so many people are, like, I'm the only one, but I'm, like, really sensitive and, like, freaked out by the whole thing. And so if I talk about something on stage, I have to find it funny. Like, I have to find humor in it. I can't just talk about something. So I don't think a lot of it's funny. Like, I can't find humor in it. I make points about stuff. Like, for example, I say, you know, I have four daughters, and a lot of the people in the religious right will say that gay people want to make their kids gay. And I'm like, and that, of course, I hate to admit that, but that's totally true.
That's your plot.
That's the only reason why I decided to have kids, was to create four big dykes. I mean, this is like a joke I do. Like, so we've been doing everything we can to make that happen. We've been taking them to a lot of softball games, and, you know, we named all four of them Hillary Rodham Clinton, you know. Okay, so I can make that funny. So there's things I do to, like, point things out, but I was never a political comic. And I also feel like I go all over the country. I'm a female comic, which is hard enough, because the second I go on stage, people are, mostly men, are like, she's not funny, and because they, like, a lot of men hate women, and a lot of women hate women. So I already have that going against me. And so I'm not going to make it harder by talking about politics and dividing the audience. And I'm gay and I'm Jewish. There's a lot that I have to deal with already that I talk about. So, I don't talk about it a ton on social media. I do. Cause like on Twitter, I can't help myself. Cause I'll look at stuff and I get enraged. So I often will say stuff cause I cannot help myself. And then a lot of times, people will go at me and then I'll start getting into a war, and then I'm like, Jessica, you got to stop. Like, it's yeah, it gets you, crazy.
You do. And follow her at Jessica Kirsten on Twitter, because she's great. Now, you touched on a couple of things, and this topic keeps coming up. I'm going to give a quick backstory on women in comedy, and this judgment of women aren't funny. And it was a couple of years ago. Well, now you got to. It's funny when you say a couple of years ago, you have to forget, remember that there's a 2-year gap. We didn't do anything, yeah. Right? So I guess 4 or 5 years ago, I was up here and I'm talking to Wanda Sykes and Cristela Alonso, and I think it was Ida Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about this, about people saying women aren't funny. And I was like, aren't we past that, this and that, right? And Wanda thought I was trying to mansplain it, and I was like, and then Ida, thankfully I'm friends with, and Ida was like, no, what he's saying is that he thought they had figured it out. Like, I'm amazed they haven't figured it out. And when Wanda Sykes told me, someone said to her, you're funny for a woman.
People say that to me every night.
Well, I was going to say, you're in the same category. To me, that's so ridiculous. Like, you're so funny for a person. It's so ridiculous to me to qualify that they still put that qualifier on it. I don't get you're funny for a black guy. The black thing, we rode that up until the 70s. By the 80s, they were like, yeah, you don't get any special. You know, I'm not gay or anything, so I don't get any curve anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? As my friends, he's like, black, that's all you got? You ain't got a chance. You know? How does it feel? And you don't, to those who haven't seen Jessica on stage, you blow them away from the minute you hit the stage. You knock their heads off. You don't gently come into funny. You wham. How are they still saying that? I just don't get it.
Well, when you're funny, you're powerful. So people don't like when women are powerful. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so that's why a lot of people hate Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of people hate Kamala. That's why a lot of women hate famous women.
Yeah.
Performers. Yeah. Do you ever notice, you know, every most famous women who are musicians, comics, they're difficult bitches, hard to work with. They're called everything. I mean, like... Do you hear that about the men?
Not,
I mean, like Ellen, Rosie, Roseanne.
You only hear it about the men. You only hear about the men who are actually difficult, bitchy,
right,
and a pain.
Right, right. But it's like you hear that about. I'm talking about comics now. Whitney, Chelsea, Kathy Griffin. I mean, all of them. You hear Amy. All of them have horrible reputation because they're powerful. They're wealthy. I mean, it's like, it's just unbelievable. And I'm, you know, when a woman is powerful, funny, like men and some women are very threatened by a funny woman. And the truth is like a lot of these women are much funnier than the men. Like in New York, where I'm a stand-up.
Like you.
Thank you. And well, but these men won't follow me.
Oh, I know.
They will not follow me. Like in New York, I was on last on every single show here.
Well, this is why. This is what I'm saying.
They complain. I don't want to follow Jessica. I won't follow Jessica. Like on every lineup. And it's like, that's funny because you're making 10 times more money than me. And you like have a lot more opportunities. So follow me.
Well, this is, and I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's
sorry
okay
for that.
No, no.
But this is what I'm talking about. You are so funny. You are one of those people, and we've talked about this. You have the famous multimillionaire, and they're like, "No, no, she's closing the show. I'm not," because they know that they're afraid their reputation will be hurt when the audience sees how funny you are.
It happened last night.
Yeah.
A famous person followed me, and he couldn't, and he didn't do well.
Yeah.
And it's
any personal satisfaction in that? Be honest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, because it doesn't make sense. Now, it's also very, I got to tell you, I don't let things upset me a lot. And I can't, because it's not worth it to harp on it. But it's very upsetting because it's frustrating because I've been killing like that for years. And, you know, then you'll see a man or a woman who's making I'm doing well and I have an amazing career and I'm very grateful and I've done tons of television and movies, but it's frustrating because then you see people who are like they're very famous and they have all this stuff and it's like, you know, I'm doing this show after show, night after night, year after year, and it gets frustrating. It does.
Well, this business is not a meritocracy.
Yeah.
And the funniest person is quite often not the most famous or the richest or whatever. And
well, that's, you know, we've talked about that so many times.
Rich Scheidner, who, I don't know if you know Rich.
You know
Rich.
Yeah.
Rich is one of the, when we talk about the old masters, Rich started in the 70s and somehow remembers all of the 80s of comedy. Like he's a historian in comedy now. And he said to me one time, he said, "We don't know why, but they'd rather hear it from them than you." And that's what, you know what I mean? Like that, there's something about, I mean, some people, their marketing and their work, I will say that I've never put the work into marketing that I've seen some people do. But he says that there's something inherent with the crowd that they pack the place for this person, and they may not pack it for you or me. But the other side of that is, you know, and this is where like the George Wallace stuff comes in. At the end of the day, we still get to make a living telling jokes. Like I have to remind myself of that, to not let that bother me so much. And then what I do is get together with you and Bobby Kelly and a few other and talk shit about the famous people who ain't funny.
Yeah, I think the fans are doing it for me now, like online. I'm getting... like it's just they're really following me now on social media because I think they're just seeing it like on TikTok and Instagram and they're just I'm getting like every I mean like you know 1,000 followers a day on TikTok and stuff like that because they're just seeing I put up clips every day of my stand up and they're just like following me and spreading the word. So it's not even about the industry or the, you know, I think if you just put it out there, people see it and then they share it, and social media is amazing. It's amazing. Like, we have that outlet now.
You have one follower that I would say is kind of impressive, De Niro. Could you talk about that story?
De Niro and Henry Winkler. Henry Winkler's an interesting one, and then I'll talk. Henry Winkler heard me on Sirius Radio, and he became a huge fan. And then he followed me on Twitter, and then he tweets all the time at me, and he tweeted, he retweets my dates. This is the funniest thing. So like I'll post that I'm in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and then he'll retweet, "Go see Jessica." Isn't that funny? "Go see Jessica in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I love her." It's like the cutest thing. And then I was in Austin, Texas at the Just for Laughs Moon Tower Festival like 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I walk in the lobby in my hotel and he's standing there. It was so random. He was doing press for Barry.
Yeah.
And he was wearing a mask and I was, and I said, oh my God, I was with my friend. And I go, is that Henry Winkler? And she goes, yes. And I walked up and I go, Henry? And he took his mask down. Like, can you imagine? It's like taking your glasses off. Like, it made no sense that he took his mask down to look at me. and he goes, yeah. And I go, it's Jessica Kirsten. And he freaked out and I freaked out and we were just embracing. And then he took all these pictures. He goes, he was with his publicist and his agent. He goes, this is the funniest. And like, that was like a once in a lifetime thing for me. I'm like, I wish you were my father. I would have been so much more okay if you were my father, like this Jewish father. Oh my God. Anyway. But no, De Niro saw me at the Comedy Cellar, like in the middle of the week, late at night, one night, he was looking for people to be in his movie, The Comedian. He was with Taylor Hackford, the actor, the director, who's married to Helen Mirren, head of the Director Guild. And I was performing, and I did my turnaround thing where I put my back to the audience and have conversations with myself, my internal monologue.
Again, people, you have to see her live to see this when she's her own therapist in the middle of her act.
Yeah, it's kind of like if I feel uncomfortable or if a joke didn't work, I'm like, it's okay. You're doing, it's okay. It doesn't matter what these people think. Don't eat bread. Like, I have a whole and he loved it. And then whatever, I didn't even know he was there. And then I went to Florida to do a Jewish community, like a 55 and older Jewish community a gig. And then at noon on a Saturday, I get a call from Taylor Hackford. I didn't even know who he was. He's huge. He directed Ray and all these movies. And he's like, hello, Jessica. And I'm like, hello. And he's like, this is Taylor Hackford. And I'm like, okay. I have no idea who this man is. He directed An Officer and a Gentleman. And he's like, I was at the Comedy Cellar the other night, and Bob wanted to know if you could meet him on Wednesday. I'm like, Bob who? And he's like, De Niro? And I'm like, sure. Like, he's like, are you available? I'm like, yeah. Like, I, no, could you imagine?
No, you tell Bob to call my people.
Yeah, no, I have to go to the mall. So I walk in to this office and Robert De Niro is sitting on this couch. He's like so little. And I sit next to him and I'm not starstruck. I don't get starstruck. It's weird. I just don't. My stepbrother is Zach Braff, you know, from Scrubs for 40 years, more than that. And I don't know. I've been around a lot of famous people. I just don't get starstruck because I know everyone's like mentally ill. Like I don't. I don't like everyone. So has their shit. I just don't even get whatever. And he's so like normal looking, De Niro, and he's so down to earth. Anyway, I sat next to him, and I ended up sitting there for 3 hours talking to him. At one point, Harvey Keitel walks in. He's like, "Hey, Bob, you like my hair?" Like it was just the crazy. I felt like I was on acid. I'm like, I don't know what's going on right now. Make a very long story short. I had been teaching comedy at the time. I still teach comedy. And he was playing a comic who had been doing it for 36 years in this movie. And I ended up teaching him how to do comedy. I ended up being in the movie. I ended up getting a producer credit. I ended up being his right-hand person. And he wore an earpiece. And I was on the other end of it on a microphone. And I was talking in his ear during the whole movie. And he like wanted me in a part of every scene. I kind of like directed a lot of the scenes. So Taylor Hackford was not a big fan of mine. But I wrote a lot of different things because a lot of it had to be rewritten. Like meaning I worked with the writers and like he just was like, where's Jessica? I want Jessica here. It was crazy. It was like, he gets like that with people when De Niro works on movies. He likes having this person that he can be like a confidant, and we became very close. And he's an amazing person. And I love De Niro a lot. And that was just from him seeing me do stand-up. Like, it was crazy. Just,
and yet women still aren't funny.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he chose a woman to be his person. Yeah.
Yeah. But see, he didn't choose a woman. He chose a comic.
No, I know. I know what I mean?
Like,
right.
you're, and that is something that, you know, I remember I used to hear that. It's like, that's a woman comic, and then that's a comic who happens to be a woman.
Sure.
Like, you know.
Well, that's how most male comics think. You know, that's how most funny male comics feel. Like, male comics like you who are established do not feel threatened by female comics who are funny.
No.
At all.
No.
You know, you'll always help me. You know, the guys who are successful, who are really funny, help female comics like me. It's funny. The female comics who are really successful have never helped me.
Yeah, but we talked about this. And we this help thing is mutual because you've definitely helped me.
Oh, I will.
Because you're New York and I'm L.A., right?
Yeah.
So we touch base in each other's cities. But we were talking about this. So, again, for the audience, there are huge name comics. They're arena comics now. You see them. It's a private jet. They fly to the gig. They bring a couple other comics who open for them and this and that. And it's great. It's really fun. You hear all these great stories. And then we don't get to do it because they're like, I'm not following you. Like, so you can't take my private jet to Dubai. And we're like, but I want to take your private jet to Dubai. I'll be less funny. Let's go to Dubai.
Yeah, I'll bomb if you take me to Dubai. I'll purposely do bad. I just want to go to Dubai.
But no, but that's what it is. And again, I don't say this as a knock to them, right? Because it's a matter of doing the show and want. I don't know about you. I want different comics than me on the show. I've had, you know, openers that are women or people who do, since I do a lot of topical and social and political stuff, I want someone who talks about their kids or their family, right? I want it to be different. And they do that too. So I'm not, that's the funny part. But we talk about that because you're such a strong comic, you're not thought of as a supporting act to a big name. You know, and that's just the way it is. So when you talk about being a funny comic who happens to be a woman or however you want to put it, your reputation, and you're just known as a comic and a killer and this and that, you destroy on stage and everything. Isn't it funny how in comedy, like, every compliment has to do with murder and destruction?
Yeah, I was just thinking that when you said destroy,
yeah,
killer.
That's what we think. How they do, they destroy, they kill the room. It's like, especially in today's society, it's like, that might not be the best description.
Murderer.
Yeah, yeah. But they'll say that. They'll say, oh, that's a murderer in comedy. I wonder how that developed.
I know. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, every compliment is you did something horrible to the people who paid to see you.
You bombed is what
that's,
you don't
that's
do well.
You did it to yourself. But every compliment is, oh, the people who came to see you, yeah, they're dead. They're dead now. Wow. Maybe that's why we don't get them to come back.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what it is.
So you talk about, and I will tell you that in my parallel to that is being the not stereotypical black comic, especially in the late 90s, early 2000s. I got that awkward thing of, we're not sure what to do with him.
Yeah.
You know, we're not sure where to put him and so on. And I'm fortunate that I was around people. Even some of the super famous black comics were telling me, like, you just keep doing what you do. They were like, keep doing what you do. Did you have somebody or people who supported you like that in that time where you were finding yourself? I was going to say finding your voice, but there's too many of those. When you were finding yourself as a comic?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember when I first started, my God, I was really in my first year, and I started working with a manager who was pretty big, I was doing a ton of characters, and she's like, you need to stop doing so many characters and do more straight, you know, stand-up kind of stuff. And it was such a ridiculous thing to tell me. And I listened to her, and I got so confused because with the character stuff, everyone was loving. Mm-hmm. And I was doing great on stage, and I was in my first year and getting big laughs. And then I started doing more like just kind of set up jokes, you know, punch lines, whatever, and not doing well. And it felt I wasn't even having fun. And then I was like, screw this, and just started doing characters again. And it's funny because like everyone loves the character stuff and the zany, crazy thing.
Well, you're so
thing.
Good at it.
Thank you. And it's important to be different on stage, you know. And then I've like, I mean, the Jewish stuff is great because everyone relates to that, not just the Jewish community, but so many other people because it's family stuff and, you know, everyone kind of knows, not everyone because some people have never met a Jew, but a lot of people know Jewish people and know the culture and like Italian people relate to it and this one and that one because it's family stuff. But also, like, even when I've gotten criticism from, like, I talk about being married to a woman, but I don't talk about it a lot because, like, I don't, it's not a lot of who I am. It's like a little bit of who I am. Like, I just live, like, in the suburbs and I'm married and have kids. And, like, it's so funny. I don't talk about it a lot. I mean, I do talk about it, but it's so like a little bit of who I am. I really mean that. And, like, I've had, like, lesbian comics or some people, like, you, not the comics, but more like some hardcore lesbians who are like, you need to talk about that more and kind of judge me for it. And I'm like, don't tell me what I need to talk about and what I don't need to talk. Like, don't tell me anything about what I should be saying on stage. Like, I will talk about whatever I want on stage.
I think we might be the only group that gets that people feel that it's okay to tell us, you know, oh, don't right. talk about politics, or like you said, you should talk more about being gay or this or that. Like nobody, I don't know anybody that goes to a singer and says, this is what your next song should be about.
Like, I know.
Nobody went
it's
to
amazing.
Bruce Springsteen and said, enough with the protesting.
Right.
How about happy?
I've talked about it on The Tonight Show. I've talked about it on Netflix, like on national television. I've come out. Like how, you know what I mean? Like, but I don't want to be pigeonholed as a lesbian because I'm a universal com. I talk about everything. It's not all of who I am. It's part of who I am. And I want to be seen as a universal person. I don't even know how to explain it. I think people are understanding what I'm saying, though. It's like,
yeah, well,
and that's how I want gay people to be seen, as like part of society, not as a group that's outside of society. I want, like, it's like even now, like this gay marriage thing is coming up again, which is unbelievable that it's even coming up again. It's just incredible. It really...
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, our society on so many things like that is moving backwards.
Well, right? Our society isn't. These Republicans are bringing it up. But I think our society is like, they don't care. Like,
yeah.
Most people don't care. And it's not even an issue for most people at all. It's these freaks that are bringing
it up. Well, when I say our society, unfortunately, they're the ones who are making the decisions because they're, you know.
Yeah.
So when you talk about being gay and it's not the major part of your life and mm-hmm. you don't have to come out on stage, hey, look at me.
Right.
Chris Rock said something. He said, it's not like the equality or civil rights. Right. He said, it's not when you're great. He said, like, it wasn't Jackie Robinson that made it okay for black people to play baseball. It was the guy who sucked but still got to play. In other words,
yeah.
when you can always point to the person who is extraordinary and comes from a different group, whether it be a woman or gay or minority or whatever. And he said, no, it's when you can be average or mediocre
right.
and nobody cares. Like they're like, you know, like Jessica bombed, not the gay woman bombed or the this or that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's when we reach, I guess, equality or normalcy. So
yeah.
Do you feel that way? You don't think of yourself as a gay woman on stage, or you think of yourself as a comic?
Yes. I'm so many things than just a gay. Yes, that's not even the first thing I think of myself as, a gay woman.
I'm so afraid to ask this. What
I've also been with men, so it's not even like I'm a lesbian. Like, I've been with men. I've been sexual with men.
You're known
I've
as
been
a slut.
A whore. No,
you're
I'm
known
joking.
As a slut
I'm
in the business.
I've been with many men. I don't mind. I've enjoyed sex with men. I could never fall in love with a man, so I'm bisexual. I'm not even like I'm married to a woman. It's very complex. So I don't feel like I'm a lesbian. I feel like I'm you know, it's like it's not so cut and dry. So it's like it's so and that's not the first thing as I would describe myself as my sexuality. I would describe myself first as a mother. I mean, as a woman, as a mother, as Jewish, as like there. It's so, you know. So I feel like so many people would be like, "I'm gay." Like that's the first thing they say. I don't see myself as that, and I wouldn't want people to see me as that as my the first thing they think of is me as a comic. No, not at all. Not at all. And I think that's what a lot of people portray themselves, which is fine. I don't judge it at all. But I think some people as comics, some comics, that is the first thing that they're seen as a comic. And that is not the first thing I want to be seen as a comic at all. It would be Jewish, believe it or not, before that.
That's what I was asking.
And I'm
so
not
that's
religious
your first thing.
At all. But that is more. I would identify more as that. It's more, believe it or not, it's more important to me for some reason. Like, I was bat mitzvahed. I feel more connected to that in my soul and in my family. And it's for some reason it's more important to me.
And which brings up another experience we had together that was absolutely fun and hilarious. We toured Israel together for what, about 2 weeks, two and a half weeks.
It was we went in the Dead Sea together.
Yeah,
floated in the Dead Sea.
It was all over Israel, and it was great because Jessica was explaining to us the Jewish, I guess, traditions and customs and culture that we didn't know, and we were laughing the entire time about the tribe. Tell them how much fun that was and what that's like to go to Israel and perform.
That was amazing because, yeah, I mean, thank God I got to go with you because we didn't choose who we were able to go with. We just, like, went to go on this tour, and we did 8 shows there. We got to tour for free, got paid. It was incredible. Like Seinfeld has this program where they sponsor comics from the United States to go to Israel. And it was for an incredible organization.
Yes,
where
absolutely.
People that lost people, that lose people because of terror, you know, it's horrible.
Yeah, people who lose their family members or whatever to terror, these shows are to raise money and raise awareness
for them to go to like into programs and the kids to go to camp in the summer. And this couple that lost their child was murdered. I know this is really upbeat right now, but anyway, their child was murdered. This couple started this amazing program, and these shows raise money for people. Anyway, but we toured and we laughed a lot. I mean, Israel is the most beautiful place I've ever been to, but the people are pretty aggressive, a lot of them. They were pushing both of us away. I mean, all over the country, they were physically pushing even Alonzo out of the way. I think they definitely thought you were a professional basketball player and maybe that I was your wife. They were staring at Alonzo a lot and staring at me. And yeah, it was, we had so much fun. We ate a lot.
Yeah. A lot of food. And then there were things that we didn't understand. What's his name? Moody, right?
Yeah.
Was with us, another comic with us. So It was like Friday, right, which is Sabbath.
Yeah.
And they're very religious. Like, they're not, as Moody said, wow, you're don't push elevator button on Friday religious, like that level.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, of course.
And we have the big meal, and we're all trying to be very respectful. And then women were coming in, and they were, like, incredibly hot. And they're wearing mini dresses and heels. And me and Moody were looking at each other like, this is church? They're allowed to do that?
they're all different levels of, a lot aren't very religious there. I think people think everyone's religious in Israel, but not at all. I mean, there's a ton of people who aren't religious at all there. And there's a ton that are. It's because we were in Tel Aviv.
My point being is Jessica was giving us the play-by-play on Judaism in Israel.
I just, yeah, it's very interesting to see the people who are really not religious at all with the people who really are very religious in one dining room. It's very interesting to see that. You have the women who are covered, you know, their elbows and collarbones and knees and all that, and then the women who are in, like, mini skirts and high heels and boobs out. It's interesting environment.
Okay, we only have a few minutes left. And so I feel almost obligated to ask if we have any questions from the audience. And to those who are listening to this as a podcast, just know there are over 3,000 people in this room right now. So it's difficult to get to all the questions. Yes, sir.
You both referenced your very first comedy class. There's got to be a story. Can you each tell a little bit of, can you each tell just a little bit about that first experience with a comedy class?
Yeah, my comedy class, what he did, and I thought this was great, he said we had to write down a funny story, and then you had to go through it line by line and take what's funny and throw away the rest. That's how like telling a 15-minute story becomes a 4-minute act. That's what I remember from that class.
Yeah, it was very good for me because it was a 6-week class, and I was able to stand with a mic and a mic stand in front of like 10 other people and just work on 5 minutes. At the end of the class, you performed at a comedy club in New York City. And basically, I remember going over lists of like things I was most afraid of, things I was that made me angry. You know, you come up with lists of things and then work on that material and also, you know, write down stories and just condense it. Yeah. But it was very good for me to do that thing, get over the fear and do it in front of a small group first for 6 weeks.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Alonzo, I met you 7 years ago at Americade, you know, big motorcycle fan, same as you. Now, the question I have for you is, well, two parts. First, how do you deal with the travel? Because you're based in L.A., and I look at your tour dates, and you cross all over the states, and I know that airplane travel ain't the best these days. And second, who house sits the Hulk?
So when it comes to travel, and Jess, you can jump in on this, I always tell people, they pay me to travel. I tell jokes for free. I mean, we fly. We fly all the time, and that's how you get around. I think we become – the internet has made us expert travel agents.
Yeah, it's getting very hard, though. Like yesterday, a ton of comics and industry people couldn't get here, I just heard. So it's hard now. It's
yeah, this
rough.
Is. I think this is the first year because post-pandemic travel is even worse. Because the airlines cut their people and didn't hire back and this and that. But I think this is the first year that logistics and travel has hurt the festival, where comics who were booked couldn't get here. They're like at an airport in New York, L.A., or London, or wherever they are, and they couldn't get here. As far as who takes care of my dog, this, you're getting personal, sir. Can't just so let him know where the Hulk is. I don't need him kidnapped, and I got to pay ransom. So, back in the back. Okay, hold on 1 second. She's going to give you a mic so we can all hear you.
Hi. Hold on. Sam Rothberg, the Comedy Cures Foundation. First and foremost, I want to say these are two of the nicest comedians in the entire industry. and what they do for charities is unbelievable. They just talked about one, which is the Kobe Mandel Foundation in Israel. But they give back all the time. And so I want to thank you personally. Mm. And my question is, when you're on stage and it's not a responsive audience or it's an off night, what do you do to reboot on stage so that you turn it around?
You want to take that? Or
first of all, I want to say you're amazing. Your organization is incredible, and you give back and do so much for people. Can you say your organization again, just so people can hear about it on the podcast? Just
the Comedy Cures Foundation, www.comedycures.org or at Comedy Cures. We bring these very talented people around the world to the ill and underserved to do shows for bombing victims, people living with acute and chronic illness, depression, trauma, recovery. And from the very beginning, for over two decades, when I was a stage four cancer patient, I met these two, and they have helped me help over a million people worldwide. So I just applaud you. But I think that when life isn't going well, the skills that you use on stage to quickly recover and keep going is what, that's part of what we teach people living with depression, illness, and trauma, how you use your comedic perspective to push through a trauma, a disappointment, a depression. So that's why I wanted to ask you if you could verbalize what you do when it's going poorly to motivate yourself and then to get the audience to come with you.
Well, I thank you, and again, you're amazing. I address the truth. I say it's not going well because I feel like, and I, like I said, I teach comedy, and I tell my students, you have to address what's going on, because some comics will be like, so anyway, da da da, and they just keep talking like doing their jokes, and everyone knows it's not going well. And, you know, they know it, the audience knows it, the staff knows it. It's like, hello, this is not going well. And so I say, you know, this isn't going well. Or I, again, like I said, I'll turn my back to the audience and have a whole conversation like, this is really not going well right now. You're doing great. It's all going to be okay, you know. And I also will sometimes go into the crowd and be like, sir, are you okay? You really don't, you know, you're really reminding me of my father right now. I don't want to take this out on you. You know, I'm projecting. I know that. I mean, maybe, you know, you're just having a hard day. Are you gassy? Like, I'll make it funny. I mean, again, it's about finding humor and stuff, because life is very painful sometimes, but we have to try as hard as we can to find humor in things, because it's healing. It really is. It's healing. And I mean, it's healed me. I know we have to wrap it up, but from the time I was I can remember, from a young child, I was not happy in my home. I love my parents, but they were miserable with each other and fought constantly. And I would go to school and I would try to make people laugh, and I would try to just be silly and make these faces and voices and do characters and do Gilda Radner when I was a kid and do all this stuff, because it was the only way I could deal with what was going on in my house and deal with life, is to be silly. And I was okay. That's the only way I was okay, was to just laugh and be silly and do all this stuff. So that's the way I healed, and that's the way I heal on stage and heal other people, is to be silly and to be funny. And I try to teach people that and try to turn things around on stage.
So again, with Comedy Cures, I've always thought of it as, when they say laughter is the best medicine, Comedy Cures takes out comics and said, here's your medicine. And I love how you do that. And I think it's so fitting that we have to wrap up the podcast. So we're going to wrap it up on how to bomb on stage. There's nothing. That's the perfect way for two comics to end. You know, what I do, it changes over time, because when you're new, you bomb. And then when you're like been around as long as we are, I don't know about you. To me, it's almost funny when a joke bombs, because yeah. I'm like, how could I be that wrong? Like, I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, I listen. That's something you learn as a comic, that listening matters as much as talking. So you can hear what the audience is laughing at, and you're like, they're not laughing at this, change directions. And another thing, this is something I teach, or I don't teach, but I'll tell new comics, you have to know your act backwards and forward. Like, people hear us improv, do crowd work. You can't do crowd work until you know your act, because then you have something to come back to. So when things aren't working, then you can, like you said, jump into the crowd. You know, why isn't this person laughing? Why isn't that person laughing? And then come back to the act. And the other thing is, you get back on the horse. You know, in L.A., we have a club called the Ice House, which is incredibly friendly. Like, they love comedy. They always, and we're always like, you know, after you bomb, you should be allowed to go to the Ice House and do a set just to get your confidence back. Hmm. But it's always, yeah, after it goes horrible, you have to get on stage again and just do it, you know. And when you're new, that is part of the job. You know, I know comics who bombed all the time when they started, and they kept at it, and they became great. And I was like, I was getting laughs in the beginning. I don't know if I could have done that. So we have to wrap up the podcast. Once again, my guest, Jessica Kearson, not just one of my favorite comics, even more so, one of my favorite people. Tell them where to follow you, and no mean comments when you do.
No, most.
All right, none of that.
99.9% of the time, people are amazing, but there's always one middle-aged, straight, white male alcoholic who... active alcoholic, not sober, who's horrific. So you can follow me at jessicakearson.com, on TikTok, Jessica Kearson, Instagram, Jessie Kearson, and Twitter, Jessica Kearson. And I love you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
And thanks, guys, for coming to the show, all the thousands of you that are here today.
And I want to say, in particular, TikTok, because TikTok's new to me. I'm Alonzo Bowden, like 16 on TikTok.
Oh, I'm going to follow you. I love TikTok.
I had a thing blow up on there, and then I was like, oh, I should be here. And by then, someone had already, you know, they take your name. But I just want to tell everyone, follow Jess on TikTok, because her humor so fits that platform. Yes. With the characters and the voices. Like, TikTok is quick, bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
And your humor is almost perfect for that, yeah. The way you do that. So everyone follow
Thank
that.
You.
This is Alonzo Bowden. Who's paying attention? You are. Thank you. Thanks, Jess, for laughs, for getting a room big enough to get everybody in here. There's going to be donuts. Afterwards, we got a truck outside, and that's the pod. Thank you.